Right, well, morning everybody. Thank you for being here this morning on this rather pleasant day. But we're going to look at this rather disturbing subject, the rise of the Fourth Reich. And you might be wondering what on earth this talk is going to be about. And I said last week I might do something today on the potential exit of Greece from the Euro. And as you know, today in Greece they're voting on... Well, it isn't. They're not voting on whether to stay in the Euro or not. We'll cover exactly what they're voting on today. But I think it's highly significant and actually links directly into this subject that we're going to look at this morning, which is the rise of the Fourth Reich. We could have labelled it a slightly different subject. We could have called it the end of Europe as we know it and the rise of the beast. We could have called it lots of different things, to be honest with you. But this is what it ended up being called. What the Bible says, I believe, is that at the very end of time, a new superpower is going to emerge on this earth. And this superpower, in effect, is going to be the resurrected Holy Roman Empire, which we're going to have a look at. And this sort of this new empire pretty much just comes out of the blue. Or I might even say it comes out of the black, and you'll see why I say that in a minute. But it suddenly appears on this earth. This is different to what we now see right now in Europe. Because Europe, you might say, is perhaps a superpower, but it isn't. It's actually lots and lots of disparate nations, all with their own governments, all doing their own thing. I'm going to show you that, in fact, 10 individual nations are going to come together and literally give up all of their sovereign power to a new superpower. And this superpower will have one ruler, it will have one government, it will have one army, and it will also have a religious aspect to it as well. There'll be one religious ruler as well as a political ruler. Now, all of this might seem a little bit far-fetched. What on earth is going to happen to suddenly have, you know, a brand new empire established on this earth? Well, that's what we're going to look at. Because the Bible clearly says this is going to happen. And it all happens quickly, and it all happens at the very time of the end. So you might say, well, what's going to cause it to happen? And I think the vote that's happening today in Greece is a catalyst, potentially, for everything that I'm going to show you to happen. This is massive and momentous things that are happening right now. And the whole foundation of Europe as we stand here now is shaking. And from this cataclysm, from this nightmare, will come this bigger nightmare, which is this unified empire. The word Reich, anybody know what the word Reich means? Means an empire. This is the fourth empire. The word Reich is empire. So we're talking about a new empire that appears on this earth. And this empire is not a good empire. It is basically godless. It is basically anti-Semitic. This empire that arises on this earth very shortly is that bad that when Jesus Christ returns from heaven and establishes his kingdom on earth, this empire makes war against Jesus. That's how bad it is. They're the only ones to do so. It's the only empire that will make war against Jesus, according to the Bible. But they literally do make war against Jesus and the saints who have been judged by that point. So Jesus is going to come back probably before the sorts of things we're talking about here, because it says that this empire literally makes war against Jesus and against the saints. And the saints, we know, are those who've been called and chosen and faithful who have already been judged. So a lot of this stuff that we're going to look at is maybe some distance down the line, and Jesus comes before. Where does it say in the Bible about everything I've just said? There's one chapter in the Bible that says pretty much everything I've just said. Where is it?
In Daniel.
Is it in Revelation?
Revelation?
Revelation gives you the specifics of what I've just said. Daniel gives you the base, but Revelation gives you the detail of what I've just said. Do you know which chapter, Ursula?
I'm afraid not.
No? Anybody know the chapter in Revelation that says everything I've just said? 17. Now, we're not going to go there straight away, but Revelation 17, pretty much word for word, says what I've just said. New empire, 10 nations giving their sovereign power to this new empire, and they make war against Jesus and the saints, and it's pretty much as clear as that. Now, the symbology and stuff in Revelation, so we've got to unlock some of the symbology, but it's not that difficult. How do we unlock the... So before we go and look at Revelation 17, what is the base? Where do we need to go and unlock the book of Revelation? Which book in the Bible do we need to go to unlock?
Daniel,
as John was saying. So we need to go back to Daniel. So that's what we're going to do. So before we delve into Revelation 17, we're going to go back to Daniel. We're going to get all the building blocks in place. Then we'll go to Revelation 17. Then we'll see what that's saying. Then we say, how does Greece and this vote today have any bearing on what you're talking about? Happy with that? So Daniel is the base for unlocking Revelation. Now Daniel, he was of course... who was he? Who was Daniel?
The Prince of Judah.
He was a Jew, and he was taken captive by the Babylonians in round terms call it 600 years before Jesus. So 600 years before Jesus, there was a big empire at that time called Babylon. And Babylon was ruled by a man called Nebuchadnezzar, and he sent his armies across from modern day Iraq, that we would call it now, but then it was called Babylon, sent his armies over, conquered lots of places, one of them was Israel. And instead of slaughtering everybody like modern-day ISIS might do and chopping heads off people, he didn't do that. He said, pick out the good-looking people and the intelligent people, perhaps people in government, ship them back into Babylon, and actually, you know, let's make them part of what we do. So they're obviously clever people. So he was quite clever himself, in terms of doing that. And Daniel was one of those good-looking, intelligent people that he brought all the way back into Babylon, and he ended up being in the court, if you like, of King Nebuchadnezzar, who was really a tyrant. He was running this whole empire called Babylon. Anyway, one day Nebuchadnezzar, he goes to sleep. Well, it wasn't one day, it was probably one night. So Nebuchadnezzar goes to sleep and he has this dream, and in the morning he wakes up. And he says, you know what, I can't remember. We've all had this, haven't we? You've had a dream, but you can't quite... You think, what was it I was dreaming about? I know it was something pretty dramatic, but I can't remember it. Have you had that? Well, that's what he had. But he was so sort of overwhelmed by what he had dreamt and the fact that he couldn't remember it, he then asked all his wise men and astrologers and soothsayers to say, listen, guys, I had a dream last night. And they said, oh, really? Yes, he said. I want you to tell me what I dreamt, and then I want you to tell me what it meant. And they said, well, look, if you tell us what you dreamt, we'll tell you what it meant. And he said, well, no, one, I can't actually remember, but I'll know if you tell me, because I'll remember then. And they said, well, no man on this planet could tell you what you dreamt. We can tell you what it meant, but we can't tell you. How could we possibly know that? He said, well, if you don't, I'll chop all your heads off. That's basically what he said. And they all got in a state, but none of them could, you know, think of what on earth what he had dreamt the night before. At this point, Daniel, who's part of the court of Nebuchadnezzar, hears about this and prays to God. And God actually reveals to Daniel in a dream, in a vision, what he had shown to Nebuchadnezzar the night before in a vision. So Daniel now understands exactly what Nebuchadnezzar has seen, and in fact was able to interpret it. And this is what I've just said on the screen. So let's watch this.
Chapter 2. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them,
"I have had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means."
Arioch took Daniel to the king at once and said,
"I have found a man among the exiles from Judah who can tell the king what his dream means."
The king asked Daniel, also called Belteshazzar,
"Are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it?"
Daniel replied,
"No wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he has asked about. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in days to come. Your dream and the visions that passed through your mind as you lay on your bed are these. As you were lying there, O king, your mind turned to things to come, and the revealer of mysteries showed you what is going to happen. As for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because I have greater wisdom than other living men, but so that you, O king, may know the interpretation and that you may understand what went through your mind. You looked, O king, and there before you stood a large statue, an enormous, dazzling statue, awesome in appearance. The head of the statue was made of pure gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of baked clay. While you were watching, a rock was cut out, but not by human hands. It struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and smashed them. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were broken to pieces at the same time and became like chaff on a threshing floor in the summer. The wind swept them away without leaving a trace. But the rock that struck the statue became a huge mountain and filled the whole earth. This was the dream. And now we will interpret it to the king."
So that was the dream. That's what he dreamed. I mean, whether it looked, it probably looked a lot better than that. But it was something that Nebuchadnezzar said, yes, that was the dream. That's exactly what I dreamt. Now it's all come flooding back. And what did Daniel say at the very end? What was the last thing that we just heard? Yeah, and then what's the very last sentence we just heard? "I will interpret it. God will interpret it. Okay? Because what does all that mean? You know, if you... Fine, there's the dream, but what on earth does it mean? So what Daniel did was then interpreted, and all of this is in Daniel chapter 2. I'm going to put it up on the screen. But Daniel goes and says these words. He says, "You, Nebuchadnezzar, are the head of gold." And of course, Nebuchadnezzar was running the empire of Babylon. And then he says, "After you, Nebuchadnezzar, there's going to be another kingdom, not as good as yours, a little bit inferior to that." And that is this silver bit here. And then after that, there's going to be a third empire, kingdom of brass. And after that, there's going to be a fourth one, which is iron. And just as iron breaks in pieces and subdues things, so this one's going to be a ruthless sort of empire. And at the very end, we've got the feet and toes that are partly iron and partly clay. And so there's going to be this sort of mishmash of a sort of a kingdom or empire right down here. And anyway, it basically says in the day... And then, of course, what happens then? So you've got this huge image. Then what happened on the screen?
A stone
was cut out. And Daniel basically says, "In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed." So in effect, this stone that's cut out here is God sending something to hit this great big empire of man image, destroy the whole lot, and it fills the whole earth. So this kingdom of God replaces all these kingdoms of men. Everybody happy with that? What do we think this rock is that's cut out that comes descending down to
Jesus?
Jesus is the rock that's cut out. The reason I did it square like that is because I don't think it was a raggedy old rock that was cut out. He is the cornerstone. I think it was a beautiful shaped, perfect thing that quite clearly couldn't have just rolled down a mountain. This was beautifully cut out, and it came crashing into the image, and it filled the entire earth eventually. So what we know from reading the whole of Daniel is who these empires were. Well, we know the first one because he says it's you, Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar, of course, ran the Empire of Babylon. If we read through the rest of Daniel, we actually know exactly who came next, and we even know who the third empire is as well. The only one that we don't isn't named is this one here, the Iron Legs. But does anybody know which empire followed on after the Empire of Babylon? The Medes and the Persians. So we're not guessing that. One, your encyclopedia will tell you that that's the empire that followed on. And Daniel chapter 7 also tells us that as well. Which empire followed on after the Medes and the Persians?
Greece.
The Greeks. So Greece and the Greek Empire followed on after the Medes and the empires. The Medes and the Persians, sorry. And which empire then follows on after the Greek Empire?
Rome.
So then we get Rome. Now, Rome is quite interesting because it's these iron legs here. But somehow or other, so Rome are these iron legs, but we still have a future empire down here, do we not, that is sort of a little bit of iron and a little bit of
clay.
Clay, by the way, is we're made of clay. We're told that we're made out of clay in Job and another number of other places as well. So it's actually all to do with man. This is to do with man's thinking and so on. So it's got some of the strength of Rome, but it's also got something to do with people and mankind and things like that. But it's a divided kingdom. But what could we say this kingdom might be down here? It's something to do with the Empire of Rome, but it exists at the time of the end. How do we know that it exists at the time of the end?
Well, it says so. That's when the rock comes and destroys.
Exactly. So when the rock comes, it doesn't hit it on the head. It comes in the days of the feet. It hits it on the feet. So actually, it's an empire that exists at the time of the end. And I think it's Europe. It's the extension of the old Roman Empire into Europe. Does that sort of make sense? In other words, the Roman Empire somehow keeps going and going right to the end. And at the end, I'm going to show you that Europe, or something to do with Europe, is existing at the very time of the end. Do you think we're stretching that? Is everybody happy with that?
Yeah.
Okay. This now gives us the clues for the rest of prophecy in relation to this. And in fact, this actually helps us unlock pretty much the whole of the book of Revelation by understanding this. But there is one other stage that we need to go to. You see, this dream was given to Nebuchadnezzar. But Daniel himself, sometime later, was given his own vision about exactly the same thing, but just different images. Which chapter in Daniel do we need to go to? Which one?
Seven.
Excellent. That's exactly where we go. So you could look it up, but I'll put it on the screen here. So this is Daniel chapter 7. And what Daniel's being shown in Daniel chapter 7 is exactly the same picture, or the same series of events, I should say, but with different imagery. So Daniel has a vision at night in verse 2 of Daniel 7. And we haven't got time to unlock all of the detail here, but I'm just going to quickly go out of it. But you notice it says that there's four great beasts in verse 3 that come out of the sea, and they're all pretty different from each other. And the first was like a lion, and it got eagle's wings, and the wings were plucked off, and so on and so forth. Then there's another beast. It's a second beast. This one's like a bear. You can read it. I'm just keeping you awake. It's got three ribs in its mouth, and there's lots of detail. Then there's another one, there's a third one. This one's now like a leopard, and it's got four wings, and it's got four heads. And it's obviously a strange-looking creature. And then finally, there's a fourth beast, and this one is dreadful and terrible. In fact, the others One was a lion, one was a bear, one was a leopard. This fourth one, well, there's no description. It's just a terrible beast. It's really strong. Look what it's got. Great iron teeth. Sort of rings a bell, doesn't it? Iron, with what we were just looking at. And it broke in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it. It was different from all the other beasts. And it had got 10 horns. And basically, this beast somehow exists at the very end of time because it talks about one of the horns making war with the saints and prevailing against them until the Ancient of Days. So something to do with this beast continues right the way through to the Ancient of Days. In other words, the end of time. So here's an artist's depiction of what these beasts might actually look like. So there's that lion, there's the bear, there's the leopard, there's a funny beast. The terrible, straight, it's not a funny beast at all, it's a horrible beast. And it's got 10 horns and so on. Now, again, Daniel was given the interpretation. These great beasts, which are four kings, which shall arise out of the earth. And in fact, it's not just talking about a king, it's talking about the empires which they ran. Because in Daniel 7, verse 23, it says, "Then the angel said to Daniel, 'The fourth beast is going to be the fourth kingdom upon the earth, or the fourth empire, which will be different from all the other kingdoms, and it would devour the whole earth,' and so on." Now, I'm going to put it to you that these four creatures correspond, well, what do you think I might be saying?
Four kingdoms.
The four empires.
Of the image.
Exactly. So you've got four metals in the image, and these four beasts correspond to the four metals of the image. Would that sort of make sense? So I'm going to suggest to you that the lion is Babylon, that the bear is the Medes and the Persians. What would the leopard be?
The Greeks.
And what would be this terrible beast?
Rome.
You got it. Those are the four empires. Daniel's just been told it in a slightly different way. There's a reason for that, but we haven't got time to really to think about that. So let's put them all up here. So there's Daniel 2. There's the image. There's Daniel 7 with all those beasts. I'm saying to you that they line up. There's Babylon and the gold head and the lion. There's the Medes and the Persians with the silver chest and arms and the bear lopsided. There's that speedy, fast leopard with wings, and there's the brass over here. It's all to do with the Greeks. And the Romans, of course, are to do with the beast and this iron. And of course, we've got 10 toes down here. And what did we have on that?
10 horns.
We had 10 horns. They all link up. All of it links up. This was partly iron. And was there any mention of iron on this? It had got iron teeth. See how this is linking up? So, do you remember we said that the iron legs must continue right the way through to the time that Jesus returns? Some element of the Roman Empire must continue to the time when Jesus returns, because as Lois said, Jesus hits the feet, which is at the end of time. Because all this is a progression of time, isn't it? So the fourth metal is the fourth beast. The stone smashes into the feet. We told as well that this beast and the horns continue to the Ancient of Days. It's the same story. Rome actually began in 30 BC. 30 years before Jesus was born, Rome existed as an empire. But somehow it must go right through to today and beyond. And that's exactly the same story with that beast over there. And of course, we were told specifically in the days of these kings, this European thing here, this sort of revived Roman Empire, in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. That's the background to Revelation. Happy with that? Now come and have a look at Revelation 17. Now hopefully some of what we've just looked at helps us understand a little bit about Revelation 17. Now Just before we do read this, I'm going to put a picture on the screen so you can see exactly what we're going to be reading about. And here it is. So what we've got here, and we'll read it in a minute, but in Revelation 17, we're told about a great beast. And this beast has got all sorts of different heads and horns, and there happens to be a woman riding it. But it's all to do with exactly the same beast that Daniel saw in Daniel chapter 7. It's the fourth terrible beast that we've got just a more detail here in Revelation 17. So let's have a look at some of these things then. Now, we're not in this talk going to really think at all about the woman that's riding the beast. We just haven't got time. We're just concentrating on the beast. Okay? So, what can you tell me about the beast? Have a look through Daniel 17. Give me any information you can about just the beast. Forget about the woman just for now. What can you tell me about the beast? So it was a red, bright red coloured beast, and obviously that it looks pretty red on the screen there.
7 heads, 10 horns.
So it's got 7 heads and 10. So we've got 10 horns. That rings a bell, does it? So, but now we've got 7 heads with 10 horns.
Dressed in purple and scarlet.
Well, the woman was. So we're ignoring that just for now.
It's covered with blasphemous names.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, so it's not a very nice beast. It's covered in blasphemy. What's blasphemy? Speaking against God. It's totally godless, isn't it, this thing? Anything else? You might need to look a little bit further down. Probably around verse 7, 8, 9.
It's once alive, but isn't now.
Yes, and then it comes into being again.
Now, how did you get that? That's very interesting. Where does it say that?
Comes out of the abyss.
Say, the beast which you saw once was, now is not, and will come up out of the abyss.
Ah.
And then go to his destruction.
Right, so we've got a beast
that
once was alive, now it isn't, but it will be again. Interesting, isn't it? Then we've got...
It says the people would be amazed at the reappearance of it.
Where does it say that?
It says, go to the bottomless pit, and the people who belong to this world, whose names were not written in the Book of Life...
Which verse are you in now?
8. Who were not written in the Book of Life before the world was made, will be amazed at the reappearance of this beast who had died.
Right, that isn't that interesting? Because you've got a modern version. So people will be amazed at this new beast that arrives. What do you think this beast might be something to do with everything we've just looked at?
Political powers.
Something to do with political power in relation to which part of planet Earth?
Europe.
This has got to be something to do with Europe, because it's a ten-horned, terrible beast, which is exactly what Daniel was talking about. And there aren't lots of different beasts floating around.
Europe's own is lots of different countries altogether.
No, exactly. So on that note, have a look here in verse 10. It says that there are 7 kings. So there were 7 heads. And it says there are also 7 kings, and 5 have fallen, and 1 is, and the other isn't come yet. And when he comes, he must continue just a short time. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the 8th. And is of the 7 and goes into perdition or destruction. And the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings, which have got no kingdom as yet, but do get power as kings 1 hour with the beast. And they have 1 mind and will give, look at this, their power and their strength to the beast. So 10 kings give their power and their strength to this great big beast.
Why is it power and authority to the beast?
Yeah, and some say power and sovereignty.
Yes.
So are you convinced just for now that this probably is something to do with Daniel 7 and something to do with Rome, the Roman Empire?
Yeah.
Are you happy with that? Here's the summary of the beast. First of all, it has got a woman sat on it, which we're not looking at. But the beast itself is scarlet, it's full of names of blasphemy, it's got 7 heads and 10 horns. The beast was and is not and yet is. It comes out of a bottomless pit and it ends up being destroyed. The other thing it does, of course, if you have a look at, which we haven't really covered, but if you have a look in verse 14, what does the beast with the woman riding on it do?
Makes war against the lamb.
And anybody else? Is anybody with the lamb?
Saints,
lords and the kings.
Chosen and faithful.
Called and chosen and faithful ones.
The called faithful. And chosen and faithful ones. And who might be the called and chosen and faithful ones?
Saints.
The saints. And who's the lamb?
Jesus.
Jesus. So there's Jesus and the saints, and this great big horrible beast that suddenly appears out of nowhere on planet Earth makes war against Jesus and the saints. Isn't that exactly what I started off by saying? So I've also done a summary of the seven heads and ten horns, because you've got the beast, but there's quite a lot of detail about the seven heads and ten horns. We're actually told that the seven heads are seven mountains where the woman sits, but we're also told that the seven heads are also seven kings. It all gets a bit confusing, doesn't it? So that you've got the seven heads equaling mountains, but you've also got the seven heads are also seven kings. We've got five of the kings have fallen. One is, and the other is not yet come. We've also told, on top of all of that, that we've got ten horns, and the ten horns are also ten kings. We're also told that they don't have a kingdom right now, but they do have power as kings 1 hour with the beast. And they've got one mind and they give their power and strength to the beast. Is that a fair summary of everything? I don't think we've missed anything out there. Right, how are we doing for time? Oh my goodness, right. This is the trouble with this talk. You've got to do the background stuff before you can nail what's actually happening now. Are you with me?
Plenty of time.
We're doing all right. We'll just keep going. What I did here was put a grid together to try to prove to you that all these things are connected. So what we've got is Daniel's fourth beast, and then we've got the scarlet beast in Revelation, and I've just put some of the things that line up so you can see that it's the same sort of creature and the same event. So there's 10 horns in Daniel 7 verse 7. There was 10 horns with this scarlet beast here. That's a clear link. Not least of which, it's a great big horrible beast. They persecute the saints. We're told that in Daniel 7:21. We're told that in Revelation 17 verse 6. It's full of blasphemy. We're told that this fourth beast is to do with blasphemy in Daniel 7:25. We've just read about blasphemy with this beast here in Revelation 17. We're told in Daniel that the beast is judged at the time the kingdom arrives. We're told that exactly the same thing here in Revelation, because the war against Christ and the saints is obviously and clearly in the kingdom. The saints are assisting the Lord Jesus and assisting in all of this in Daniel, and the same applies as we've just read with the called and chosen and faithful ones here with this beast. And finally, we're told in Daniel that the beast is destroyed by flames, and the scarlet beast is also destroyed by flames. So what I'm saying to you is, Daniel 2 was the original plan of God in relation to all of this that was given to Nebuchadnezzar in the form of an image made of metals. What then happened was, a few years later, Daniel got another vision from God, which was all about beasts, but was in effect exactly this, but just with more detail. And many, many, many years later, John, who wrote Revelation, was given a vision by the Lord Jesus Christ himself that was expanding on this and giving even more detail. So the whole thing is a developing story. Happy with that? Okay. So the beast in Revelation is something to do with the Roman Empire. The feet of the image have got iron in it. We've talked about that. The beast has got iron teeth. This beast in Revelation 17 is talking about, in fact, the whole history of the Roman Empire from pretty much the time that John was writing right the way through to today and beyond. So, right, we need to have a look at this then. So, This beast comes out of what? So, yeah, exactly. Comes out of a bottomless pit. So I don't know whether you can make this out on the screen, but that there is a bottomless pit. Right? And so here comes the beast out of the bottomless pit. That's exactly what's going to happen. It suddenly appears, and as Janet, from her version, said, everybody's gobsmacked, amazed that this thing has suddenly appeared on Earth. Okay? And as we've just said, the beast, it was and is not and yet is. And I think the modern versions put it slightly clearer than that. It basically says, once upon a time, this beast did exist. It was an empire. The Roman Empire did exist. But then, for some reason, it doesn't exist. It stops existing. And then, in some form, it's now going to exist again. It's going to come out of the bottomless pit. That's what it means when it says the beast was. In other words, it did exist. It is not. So at the time John was writing this, his vision, I think, was just before the emergence of the beast. So he is not looking at it from his time frame. He's looking at it right into the future, just before the beast appears. Are you with me? And he's now giving you the whole picture right from the time he was writing, which was 100 AD roughly, right the way through to the end. And it's just, he's given a vision just before it appears. So, what we now need to do is go into history and look at how Rome and the Empire of Rome developed over time. Is that a fair point? And can we link all the history of Rome back to this detail with horns and heads and stuff? And I think we can. So here is the development of the Roman Empire that God is obviously very, very interested in, is he not? And I'll tell you about that at the very end. So the Roman Empire, originally with this great big pink blob, anything that's pink there was part of the original Roman Empire. When did it begin? I've already told you that.
You said 30 BC.
30 BC. Okay. So it all began in 30 BC. It followed the Greek Empire. And from 30 BC, give or take, right the way through to the year 323 AD, the Roman Empire existed, and it was a pagan empire. This empire was not a Christian empire. It worshipped all the different gods, you know, mainly Greek gods. And in fact, all of that is detailed in Revelation 12, which again talks about a beast or a dragon with seven heads and ten horns. We're not looking at that. But Revelation is all about the development of this whole thing. We've just jumped in at chapter 17. But something happened to change the Roman Empire to something different in this year here. Does anybody know what happened to change the Roman Empire?
Constantine decreed that they should become Christian.
Constantine, the Emperor of Rome, said, you know what, we're going to change things. We're not going to be a pagan empire anymore, we're going to be a Christian empire. And this is the second phase of the Roman Empire. This is part two of the development of Rome. And there he was, so there he is, the beast that was. This is Constantine. Looks a bit like Putin, doesn't it? But it is, but it's actually Constantine. And from 324 AD, right the way through to 476 AD, the Roman Empire became a Christian empire. All this is detailed in Revelation 12. Constantine the Great came to power in 306 AD, and he converted to Christianity. John knows all about this better than most. And he basically said, did he not, that the church should be intimately involved in the way that the whole government was run. And part of that was the naming of Rome and the Bishop of Rome as the successor to St. Peter and becoming like a powerful person in his own right. This is where the popes were really invented and came into being, because they wanted a ruler from a religious point of view that had got some power alongside, because it gave the whole thing, you know, that Christian element that they wanted. And so that's where the Bishop of Rome was named, at this same sort of time. Trouble was, of course, they mixed up lots of their pagan theories with Christianity. They wouldn't really let go of all their false worship, and they mixed it into Christianity, which is where we get Christmas and where we get Easter and where we get the Trinity and all sorts of different bits of nonsense. So what happened was, one of the key things that Constantine did was in the Council of Nicaea, which he presided over himself, he got 300 bishops coming along, and they had to work out the controversy over, was Jesus God or was he not God? That's what they debated back then. And which way did they come down on? What did they say? This is what it is. Did they say Jesus was God or he wasn't God? They said he was God. And made a right hash of it. And bamboozled throughout time millions, if not billions of people, trying to persuade you that it was God who was dead on that cross. Anyway, that was part two. What actually happened during Constantine's time, though, was that the Roman Empire got split into two. It became, can you see here, it's got Western Roman Empire and Eastern Roman Empire. So the Roman Empire got split into two. Do you remember with the image, there were two legs? It's symbolic of the Roman Empire splitting into two. And really, from here on in, what Daniel and the beast is tracking is this side of it over here. So when we start now looking at the development of the empire, the Roman Empire is really heavily focused from here on in on the western side over here rather than the eastern side over there, which became a different story. So when did I say that the Roman Empire finally came to an end? 476. 476, so 323 was the Council of Nicaea and when Constantine was there. But the Roman Empire finally all came to an end in 476 AD. That's still 1,500 years ago. But then what happened, and this is part three now, was this. This is the development of the Roman Empire. This was called, anybody know what we're going to talk about here? It is Europe, so it's in Western side, but we're still way back in history. What actually suddenly appeared?
The Holy Roman Empire
appeared in Western Europe. So the Holy Roman Empire appeared, and this was, in effect, the resurrected Western half of the original Roman Empire. Do you remember I said it split into two? This is the resurrected Western side. And this existed a long, long, long time, all the way from 800 AD right the way through to 1806. 1,000 years the Holy Roman Empire existed. That's a long, long time. And it was ruled by Holy Roman Emperors. Does anybody know what nationality almost all of them were?
Italian?
German.
German.
Almost every single one of them was German. If you look at the map, which is this huge nation right in the centre of it all?
Germany.
It became a Germanic empire. It was known as the First Reich. The Holy Roman Empire was known as the First Reich, the first German empire. And it was actually, believe it or not, the popes that selected the emperors. The popes at this point had got great, great power. They'd been given power by Constantine, but now they were seriously in the driving seat, and they were the ones who said, you are going to be the next emperor. And actually, they crowned them, and they were almost always German kings. And this is a picture of the pope crowning King Charlemagne. You might have heard of Charlemagne, because he was pretty much the first emperor of this empire system. In fact, even now, there's a Charlemagne Award. Tony Blair won it one year. You can win the Charlemagne Award if you're very, very pro-Europe. Okay, but this came to an end in 1806. Anybody know what happened now? Was there another empire? We've had the First Reich. Well, in fact, there was a second one. It was called the German Empire in 1871, this came about. Not many people know about this, but it's known as the Second Reich. So in 1871, so it was again an empire, because it took over quite a lot of territory. And this is from a LaRousse history, so this is from an encyclopedia. It says, by 1870, the principle of a unified German Empire had been accepted. The new German Empire, the Second Reich, was as Prussian, or as German, that really is saying, as the Holy Roman Empire had been. This bid to dominate Europe led to World War I, 1914 to 1918. The emergence again led to World War I. So the First World War was all linked to the German Empire re-establishing itself as an empire. And that was the Second Reich. They developed a common currency, a central bank, and a single code of commercial and civil law for across this empire. That's interesting, isn't it? Common currency, single trading block. Right, now all that, yes, exactly. Now all that came to an end because of World War I. But no, and this was interesting, no sooner had the Holy Roman Empire come to an end than Prussia, northern Germany, began to assert itself. The Prussian king Frederick decided that the highest award of his realm would be the Iron Cross, later to be used by the Kaiser in the 1914-18 war and Hitler in the 1939-1945 war. Why did they not use gold or silver or brass? But no, it was appropriately iron. So this was their, the award. Now we're on to part five. So what do you think part five is? So the German Empire came to an end, mainly because of World War I. Who then comes onto the scene and what's he trying to do?
Hitler.
So now we've got part five. This is now the Third Reich, the third attempt at setting up an empire in Europe. So this is now Nazi Germany. Adolf Hitler's National Socialist Nazi regime in Germany called itself the Third Reich. This designation was chosen to identify the Nazi Reich or Empire as third succession to the Holy Roman Empire and the German Empire. So said, not just me, but encyclopedias say that. Of course, the Kaiser is just the Germanic form of the word Caesar. Rose to dominate all Europe. And who did he make war against? But the Jews, God's people. He's God's holy chosen people. Interesting, isn't it? And here is the German Empire on the scene. And what does that lead to? World War
Two.
Interesting, isn't it? And lo and behold, look at this. Here's the Pope, who assisted, this Pope Pius the 12th, assisted the rise of Hitler. This was the headline in the Times in September the 8th, 1999. So once more, the popes are behind the scenes bringing all of these things about. I wonder who the woman was that was riding the beast. So, five separate parts of this have ended. We've had the Roman Empire end that was pagan. We've had the Roman Empire end that was Christian. We've had the Holy Roman Empire end. We've had the Germanic Empire end. We've had the Nazi Germany end. That's five stages that have ended. Unity in Europe is an ancient ideal, says Encyclopaedia Britannica. In a sense, it was implicitly prefigured by the Roman Empire. In the Middle Ages, it was imperfectly embodied by Charlemagne's empire and by the Holy Roman Empire and the Roman Catholic Church. Later, a number of political theorists proposed plans for European unity. Adolf Hitler tried to unite Europe by conquest. You see, the encyclopedia links it all together. It's the same story, and God tracks it right the way through. So, there we are, the beast. Now, do you remember it said that the seven heads, as well as representing seven mountains, are seven kings? And we're told that five are fallen, one is, and the other is not yet come. And I believe that the seven heads are the seven stages of the Roman Empire, from the beginning through to the end. And five are fallen, one still exists, and the other is about to come, says John. And the five that are fallen are the five that we've looked at. They're the five. So John is writing from the point of view of here, and now he said there's one that's still existing and there's another one that's still to come. So let me try and make sense of this. The five heads are fallen are the five stages of the Roman Empire that have all come to an end. Now one continues to exist. One part of this whole system has never ever stopped existing. Which part of the whole story has never stopped running the whole time?
Roman Church.
The Roman Church. And that one is a head in itself. So even though the woman's riding the beast, it's also one of the systems of the whole thing. And it never ever stopped. Never ever once did that pope and papacy stop. So that one keeps existing. And finally, we've got the one that's to come. Now, what's that? What's the one that is to come? There's one that John says that's about to emerge after all of this. Well, I think it is the European Union, but there's another stage to it that is about to come. So the European Union was an attempt to do all of this again, wasn't it? So let's quickly look at, we're nearly finished, let's have a quick look at the European Union reviving Caesar's empire. In 1951, so straight after the Second World War, Germany, France, Italy, Luxembourg and the Netherlands signed a Treaty of Paris setting up the European Coal and Steel Community. They then signed the Treaty of Rome in 1957 that creates an economic community. In 1993, the European Union was established by the Maastricht Treaty. Germany prepares to push for a single European state, was a headline in the Times. Germany is to push for significant further transfers of sovereignty to Brussels in order to turn the European Union into a single political state. Europe will be dominated by Germany, and this time it includes Ireland, Spain and Portugal as well. We have found a peaceful way to make an empire, said one politician. We've discovered that political manipulation is better than tanks. It's the same story, it's just been done in a totally different way. And what they then, of course, did was launch this, which was... we've lost sound because I've gone on way too long. This was the launch of what?
Launched across the 11 countries of Euroland today. Not everyone was happy. The Dutch finance minister was attacked by anti-Euro protesters.
So that was the launch of the Euro, not many years ago, wasn't it? So this was now we're trying to get all of everybody onto the same currency. But of course, it's a bit of a disparate thing, isn't it? Because we've still got individual nations. It's not really an empire, is it? Everybody runs their own show. But there's a final stage that actually is going to be a united empire once again. And that's what we're on the brink of happening. There's 17 nations in Euroland. 17 nations using the single currency, but it isn't a unified thing. The beast has not yet totally risen out of the pit, but it is going to. So we've got five that have fallen, one still exists. The European Union is one of the heads, but here's a really interesting thing, look. The beast that was, this is Revelation 17 verse 11, the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth and is of the seven and goes to destruction. So in other words, we've got seven stages, but the last stage of all, which is connected to the seventh one, is the beast itself, which emerges from the bottomless pit. It's the eighth one. Does that make sense? There's an eighth stage, but it's part of the seventh, which is the European Union. And it's the beast, it's the whole thing itself coming out is the last stage. And it's all connected to Europe. That's what all that says. It's a true empire that's about to emerge, a final true empire. The Fourth Reich. You see, what I think is going to happen is that the Holy Roman Empire will exist again on earth, and 10 nations will emerge together and combine one great big solid block with one central government, with one leader, with one religious leader ruling over it. And when you look at it, there are in fact 10 nations that cover or partially cover. If you look at the Holy Roman Empire, here's the 10 nations that are covering all of that, which is Holland, Germany, Poland, Czech Republic, Austria, Italy, France, Slovenia, Belgium and Luxembourg. All of that are either covered or partially covered in the Holy Roman Empire. So I think these potentially are the 10 nations that are all going to come together. But the question is, what is the catalyst for this new empire being created? Or everybody coming together and saying, look, let's forget the European Union. It hasn't worked. It's all falling apart. Let's get together with one political bloc, one common currency, one king that rules over it. And I think that is exactly what's on the cards right now. Because Greece is a domino that's about to fall over and the whole lot is going to go into a cataclysmic dive. This was 2011. Enter the Fourth Reich. Peter Oborne's column in the Daily Telegraph today is a chilling thesis that the recent bailout of Greece will cement a chain of events leading to the virtual colonisation of poorer EU countries by the rich ones, namely Germany. Enter the Fourth Reich. Eurozone must act before Greek crisis leads to global meltdown. The attempt to bail out Greece and other struggling Eurozone countries raised the prospect of a two-speed European Union with far closer ties between countries using the euro compared to those such as Britain that remain outside. There's a two-speed thing. But when Greece falls over, which I'm absolutely certain it will, this is going to lead to a total redesign of the European Union. The beast is going to come out. Grexit, that's Greek coming out of the euro, to cause domino effect among weaker economies, Italian lawmakers said. This was yesterday. If Greece leaves the euro area, the Brussels House of Cards will face serious repercussions. I do not say everything is due to automatically collapse the following day, but for sure that would exactly cause a domino effect in the economic disadvantaged countries. So all the weaker stuff around the edge suddenly goes over like dominoes. One after the other, the financial contagion of Greece coming out, it will be enormous. And Germany then says, enough's enough. We can't bail out all of these countries. We've struggled to do it with Greece. We're doing something different. And we'll pick you, and we're going to get together and give up all of our sovereign power and we will create an empire. That's exactly what I think is coming. Grexit could be the beginning of the end for Europe. And isn't it amazing that Greece is the home of democracy? The whole lot's going to fall down because of the Greeks, I believe. It's Greece that had the very first government in the whole world, in the whole of history, that was governed by democracy. And there they are voting as we sit here right now, voting right now. And if they vote no, the whole lot will unravel. People power will bring the whole thing to an end. Greece is the cradle of democracy. It's even the word democracy comes from the Greeks. And there it is, all about to wobble over. The Acropolis, where it was all invented, democracy was invented right here, is the most characteristic monument of the ancient Greek civilization, and it continues to stand as a symbol in many ways of democracy in the Greek civilization. The whole lot is shaking because of what is happening there. We want a United States of Europe, says an EU top official. That was the other day. Europe's great project faces its biggest challenge in the Greek bailout referendum. This is shaking the whole thing to its core. And this was a headline today. So just before it came out, I looked on the Daily Telegraph and it says, EU warns of Armageddon if Greek voters reject their terms. Pretty amazing headlines, aren't they?
Yeah.
That was right now. The question is, though, why does God tell us so much about all of this? Why does he care? And the point is, and I've got 2 minutes, I've forgot about this, I need to show you this. It's to do with this. Anybody know what that is? The Tower of Babel. You see, the thing is, Babel was God dividing all the languages and dividing the nations, wasn't it? He says, I want you to have your nation because you speak that language, and I want you to have your nation because you speak that language. God designed the nations. What Europe is doing is going against God's command and bringing it all back together under one empire. And just to prove to you that exactly that is happening, there's the Tower of Babel painting, the famous one, and Europe designed its own parliament building on exactly that painting. They actually said, we are designing it on Babel. We are resurrecting Babel. Now, was Babel good or bad in God's sight? Exactly, because it was godless, it was immoral, and it was saying, mankind knows better than you, God. And Europe is redesigning that, and that building, they say so themselves, we haven't just made that up. Their guide says that it was designed on this painting. More than that, they've got posters that actually declare it. Europe, many tongues, one voice, with the actual famous painting there, with the 12 stars above it. That was a famous European painting from a number of years ago. And to cap it all, outside this Babel building is a beast with a woman riding on it. And to cap it all, they even have coins with a beast with a woman riding on it on their coinage. That's how astounding all of this is. You see, this could happen. The whole lot could fold under. I honestly think it is going to happen. Even if they vote yes, they haven't got the money any longer to bail Greece out. The whole thing needs a redesign. And emerging from it all will be this. A new empire, godless, and will set themselves up against the Lord Jesus Christ. And just as the other two Germanic empires led to the other two world wars, guess which one this would lead to? The third one. It will lead to the third world war. So you see, there is going to be, I believe, a new empire that emerges. God knew it in advance. He is not happy with it. And this is so godless, so immoral, and so anti the Lord God that they will even make war against Christ and the saints. But actually, what's going to happen? Christ will prevail, and this beast will be destroyed, and the kingdom of men will come to an end, and the kingdom of God will be established and cover the whole earth. And all the godless kingdoms of men will come to an end. And finally, we'll live in righteous government and righteous laws under the rulership of the Lord Jesus.